Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is an Our Paranormal Afterlife remastered episode, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. I've recently gone back and listened to some of the older episodes, and I was reminded just how much valuable, relevant insight they still offer. So I'm going to be re-releasing one episode each week, now with updated and remastered audio for a much better listening experience. In this episode, I'm talking to Pete Smith about his book, Quantum Consciousness, Expanding Your Personal Universe. Peter was president of the Michael Newton Institute from 2009 till 2018, when he became director of the Newton Legacy. He has trained Life Between Lives practitioners and teachers in different parts of the world since 2006. Hi, Peter. Thank you for coming on to the podcast. I think we're going to have a fascinating conversation.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Simon. I always love having these conversations when we're on the other side of the world, but we can speak like we're in the same room. It's just great.
You worked at the Newton Institute. You're also a hypnotherapist, and you take people through Life Between Lives progressions. Well, could you tell us how you first got interested in the Life Between Lives space?
Well, interestingly, Simon, if I go back to the start, as happens so many with people in the field that you and I are in, I started as a client. And, you know, I'm 54 now, but when I was in my late 20s, I was in corporate life and very stressed. And I went to my local general practitioner, and they had what they called relaxotherapy. And she was an Indian lady, and she took me out the back of her clinic and introduced me to hypnosis, taught me self-hypnosis, and it really changed my life at the time. After that, I started to read books on past lives, and I was inspired by the usual ones, Brian Weiss, some of the other ones that have, you know, come to note in recent years about past lives. There's lots of books out there now, which is great. And I was completely fascinated. And in the end, I did some hypnotherapy training, all with a view towards being a past life therapist, as something that really impressed me, because I'd done a few of my own sessions at that time and validated historically on the internet information that proved it to me. And from there, once I'd trained as a hypnotherapist, about 16 years ago now, I think it was, I was in a bookshop and I came across Michael Newton's book, Journey of Souls. And when I read the back of that book, just pulled it off the shelf, the whole world changed for me. And I found myself in America learning that work.
Do you find that taking people through Life Between Lives sessions is very beneficial for them?
You know, Simon, if I could summarize it into one key concept, and as you know, as a past life therapist as well, what past lives does is it validates to somebody that physical death is not the end, and that the whole fear around death changes from that moment when people experience reincarnation firsthand. But for me, Life Between Lives offers us the absolute, total, and complete understanding that we are a spiritual being having a human experience, that I'm part of a very long book, which is the lineage of my soul. And I'm in the chapter of Pete at the moment. But to uncover what lies in some of those other chapters brings the whole book to life. And whereas once I might have seen this body of Pete as a prison for my soul, I now see it as a gateway to so much more.
Would you say that a Life Between Lives session would be good for absolutely everyone, or are there some people you would recommend don't do it?
Well, when I joined the board of the Newton Institute many years ago, and we were sitting around and we were talking about taking Michael Newton's work out to the world, etc., I said in that meeting, I wonder how many LBL practitioners we'd need in the world to make sure that everybody has a Life Between Lives session. And they all sort of looked at me a bit funny. And I said, well, why don't we just do every politician and every CEO? And once they understand the spiritual purpose for them incarnating into these bodies, that's how we can change the world. So I think that it's an incredibly personally enlightening experience. But Simon, it's not for everybody. And what we find sometimes is that people will want to have one of these sessions and they do need to move through repair, if you like, of some aspects of this life before they're ready to move deeper. And, you know, you have to be able to be open enough to embrace this personal experience and stretch the box of who you are that goes beyond our conditioning from a world that has told us that, you know, this is just a physical plane, science has all the answers, religion is something that you need to align with, we need to live by somebody else's truth and rules. But we are these incredible metaphysical beings who are here to make a difference to the planet in their own small way. So I think to get the most out of the experience, you need to be really open to the metaphysical exploration of who you really are.
So that for some people, they shouldn't do a life between life space till they're ready for it.
Yeah, that's right. I think it comes at a time in your life when you're looking for a deeper sense of truth as to where you fit into this physical realm and what lies beyond for you. And, you know, it's like the soul wakes up inside, Simon. And it's like the soul encourages you to find that book, have that conversation, watch that YouTube, whatever it might be. And the soul, if you like, I think edges us on towards discovering who we really are. And I sense that there's a collaboration between all the souls on this planet that as we awaken as humanity, we really need to understand that what we've been doing on this planet so far and where we are now doesn't really work. It's not sustainable for the generations to come. And we hear all about global warming and GMO foods and all of that and, you know, our water. And we hear all about these things. But, you know, in order to break the mindsets at the level of humanity, we need to break the mindsets at the level of the individual first. And I think this is one of the really beautiful ways in which that can be done.
So when you take somebody into the session and you start the hypnosis, does somebody who is experiencing this need to be in a really deep hypnotic trance, or could it be more of a lighter one?
Look, there's different tools and different techniques that we use, but traditionally using Michael's method that was honed over 7,000 clients and 35 years, and of course it's, you know, we've got something like 50,000 cases behind, you know, our group at the Newton Institute now, we estimate. But Michael had a lot of success with getting people down into a deeper state of being to uncover more of the superconscious memories, which is, if you like, soul memories. And we would do a very long and slow and deep induction. And, you know, life is so busy, Simon, that the mind is very much intrusive in terms of any of the hypnotic techniques at first. And our role as a practitioner is to set those to the side. And then we need to drop down past the memories that are held even within this lifetime to uncover those that are held deeper that we haven't accessed before through this physiology, whether it be, you know, whether you believe the memories are held in the brain or in the morphic field or wherever they are. I mean, ultimately, they are held in our energy field. Because these memories that we're uncovering, even at the past life level, have not been accessed before in this body and they've never been part of this body. So levels of memory go deeper beyond this lifetime. And, you know, to do a long, slow, deep induction with a few warm-ups through retrieving some childhood memories, you know, this work is really characterized by these deeper sets of trance, because what we're doing is we're remembering what it's like to have an out-of-body experience while still in body. And that's the beauty of the work, is that the trace elements that take us back into our superconscious memory are still held with us now. So yeah, very, very deep hypnosis. Whereas, you know, I might work with anxiety or depression, and you can usually get people into their stuff, if I can call it that, in this lifetime very easily and very naturally, because it's there and it's very present and they live with those conditions every day, and we can dig down and we can find the source of that quite readily. But for this type of work, we do need a deeper trance state, and we can spend anything like an hour getting them down into that space.
And one of the things that was very impressive that Michael Newton kind of discovered was over the course of working with so many people, there was a consistency of the narrative in the life between life space. And that's kind of a verification of it, isn't it?
Well, it was fascinating. And this is the part that really let Michael know that he was onto something, that, you know, people who would come to him for these initial sessions, this body of research that was his original 7,000 cases, it didn't matter what they did for a profession. It didn't matter what their religious standing was. It didn't matter whether they, you know, had different types of belief systems. He would skillfully move all of the human stuff out of the way and simply drop them down into the pieces that really made them who they are beyond this physical body. And there was such similarity, soul groups, meeting with a wise council of beings that steer us through lifetimes, even a lot of the interlife activities, working with energy or learning in classrooms or, you know, absorbing information out of a library, all of these metaphysically, you know, presented to the client in a way that allows integration into the human form. I mean, that was really the beauty of his work and still is.
Can we go through some of the parts of a life between life session? If I tick them off and go down a list. The first one is guides. When you pass over, you meet your spirit guides.
Yeah, there's a lot of contact that happens with spirit guides. They are beings are always close by us. One of the things I love to do in the Life Between Lives sessions is to ensure that the bond between the client and their guide is very, very strong and continues on in daily life, where they can have ready access to them to be able to, you know, receive the advice and support, and to know that they're never truly alone. Because, you know, loneliness is one of the things that characterizes us in human form. And it's a great fallacy, of course, Simon, because, you know, we're never truly alone. We have these spiritual beings of love and support us every moment of every day and watch over us and steer us and guide us. But, you know, they're unseen in the physical form. So these guides have usually been with us for many lifetimes. They have in their own day incarnated. People tell me that they have met their guides in an incarnated form as well. That wasn't necessarily something that Michael found in his research, but of course everybody's experience is what it is. I've had people tell me that they've had relatives stay on to continue to guide them. And I'm not sure they're formal guides. I think they're more informal ones. But the main crux of the whole guide thing is that we are loved and supported very closely by these guiding beings who have known us across many lifetimes and continue to support us in this one.
And so do you get soul guides that are kind of guiding an entire group of souls? It would kind of make them in charge.
I guess I have heard stories of, you know, most people have their own personal guide. And I have heard stories about guides consulting to a group of beings. If somebody's in their soul group, we'll probably talk about that in a moment. But I've heard people report that a guide will sometimes offer information to more than one person at a time. And I sense that that's probably more of a teaching role. Certainly in terms of being in charge, it's not so much that it's advice offered. It's more of a consulting process. There's advice offered, but then, of course, in terms of our free will that exists both on the other side and also here, it's up to us whether we take that advice or not. We might ask a guide about, you know, should I incarnate in that life? Should I incarnate in that life? And they'll help us to find the best possible decision. But at the end of the day, it's really back to us as the creators of our own destiny.
And do you have much knowledge of the near-death experience phenomena?
Interestingly, at the Newton Institute, we're currently doing some research and we're mapping near-death experiences with the characteristics of a Life Between Lives session and looking for the overlaps on those. And so our research department is looking at that at the moment. I've had a couple of clients who've come in with NDEs and they've had that lost time. One lady, car accident, she woke up in hospital a couple of days later. She wanted to retrieve that intervening period. And fascinatingly, while she had no conscious memory of what had happened after that, she looked up and saw a truck coming towards her vehicle, and then she woke up in hospital 3 days ago. 3 days later, sorry. She was able to recount in deep hypnosis exactly what happened through that 3 days, from know, being removed from the vehicle by the emergency workers, being placed in ambulance. She was floating above the scene, about, you know, 30 yards above the scene for, you know, for some time while they worked on her and got her into the ambulance, and the ambulance took off down the freeway. And, you know, she followed along, flying above and behind the ambulance, and followed her body all the way into the emergency room, and then, you know, a couple of days later decided that her body was retrievable and jumped back in again. So, yeah, there's some strong characteristics for near-death experiences that are similar to life between lives, because they are, of course, both had a body experiences.
Yeah, because I was going to ask if the soul guide would be the kind of entity that near-death experiences describe when they first move on and they're met by somebody, and then also they go through the life review with an entity supporting them.
My experience of NDEs, and I'll tell a little story in a moment because my mother actually had one. My experience of NDEs is they never get to the debrief as much because they return to the body and keep going. So it's like the life isn't complete and ready for review as yet. However, they might have had conversations with guides that have let them know, brought insight to some of the things that have happened in their life. You need to go back because this happened or that happened, or this is what is possible, and how do you feel it's gone, and do you want to stay, do you want to go back? So I've had some of those conversations described to me by near-death experience survivors. Where it comes back to a more personal experience for me is when I was about 9 years old, I think I was, my mother did an operation and she was, if you like, overcooked by the anaesthetist, and she floated up and out of her body. And she floated on the ceiling for a little while, and she watched what was happening, and the doctor who was abusing this anaesthetist, who was probably an older man at the end of his career, and he'd lost track of what he was doing, and my mother technically died on the table and they were trying to revive her, but she shot down the traditional tunnel that we hear about so often, and at the end of that tunnel there was a wise being waiting there for her. And because she has the strong religious connotations, she was, you know, she's always mentioned this about the time that she met Jesus. And, you know, there was a beautiful wise being there, and she said to him, "I need to go back. My children need me." I was 9. I had a sister, 10 and 12. And so he said, "Go in peace." And she woke up in the ward and found herself in a body. So she didn't really get to the debrief. She didn't really understand what was going on for her beyond that. She kept this to herself, Simon, for decades as well. And when I first started to do this work and met Michael, and we started to build the Newton Institute and all of those things, I wanted to know what I was doing. So I gave her a copy of Michael's first book, Journey of Souls. And she cried and she told me that story, and I was the first one that heard it. So, and I've asked her permission if I can tell that story from time to time, so I'm doing so now. But really it was a validation through an LBL book of her near-death experience, because there was such similarity in the experience.
We went off on a bit of a tangent there, didn't we? If we get back to the next thing I was going to ask you about was soul groupings. Are souls grouped together and they just stay together through all their incarnations?
Yeah, look, our research has shown, and the personal experiences of clients that I've had over the years reflect this also, is that we incarnate in groups of beings and we support each other through the evolution of our soul in these different lifetimes. And it will play different roles for them as well. And I think this really accounts for the synchronicity that we feel sometimes when we meet somebody. Wow, I just met that guy today, but I feel like I've known him before. Or, you know, love at first sight is that soulmates reuniting in this life after many that they've had together. I mean, these are all phenomena that we experience in human form. But yes, I think that they do reflect the fact that we come together in these clusters of souls that that support each other through our lifetimes.
Now, when I did the Life Between Lives session recently, I got to the point where I met up with my soul group. And it looked like they're having a huge party. And they kind of said to me that the, I don't know how you, you describe it, it's like you'd say the characteristic or the purpose of this particular group was fun and laughter and enjoyment. And that made me think, do different groups have different characteristics or do they go through phases?
Look, they do. There's, if you like, there's the individual journeys, but then it's a collective journey as well. And, you know, what we see in soul groups is they'll have like a generalized characteristic themselves, but then they'll go off and they'll take that generalized characteristic as a personal intention into each of the lifetimes that they move through. So, yeah, what you're describing is, you know, typical of what we see in soul groups as well. But for me, it's more that bond and that support of souls that you've known for such a long period of time that really give the soul group its energy. But I love that theme of fun. Simon, how's that working out for you in this life?
It's all right. It just looked like a Monty Python sketch in a way.
Well, I love that. That sounds like a great concept.
I arrived in that space. My soul guide seemed to come down in a huge golden ball and he stepped out of it. And it was like he started dancing, like a Monty Python sort of dance.
And, oh, yes.
And it was like he was saying to me, you know what, you should chill out more. You should enjoy yourself. Don't take things so seriously. It was like he was trying to give me a message. The next thing I was going to ask you about is the Council of Elders.
Yeah, we have a group of wise beings that guide us between lifetimes. And they will, you know, encourage us and steer us and offer us, you know, feedback or where the lesson's been missed. And is this a pattern that goes across different lifetimes? And the beauty of being in this in-between state is that you're not locked in linear time and you can observe the lineage of your soul in a way that helps you to understand the themes across many lifetimes. Now, this council has usually been with us for that whole period of time, and so they know us very well. And on the council, there are individual members who all offer something a little bit different. And, you know, they bring their own personal characteristics to that as well to offer us yet another angle on the support of this group. Now, these council members can be anywhere. You know, I've seen them at, you know, two or three people all the way through to about, you know, maybe a dozen or so. And, you know, the number, Michael found that the number often reflected the complexity of where the, you were in the soul lineage at that time. But, you know, I've seen people who've come that have had many, many lifetimes across linear time, if you look at it that way for the moment. And they really, you know, they just want to offer us the support that we need. And, you know, but it's a really safe space. Simon, a lot of people, you know, they worry about fronting a council as like sort of an interview panel or something like that, but it's the energy that we receive from these advanced beings that offer us guidance and support is this incredible, I guess, power of unconditional love, and that they're really and truly there for us.
And is there a thing in the Life Between Lives space where if you're not supposed to find out something there, because it would affect you negatively in your life, then they will just not interact with you?
Well, often I've had clients told over the years that not today. That's for another time.
Yeah, I
have.
And
that's, they're always so respectful, Simon, of free will. And that, you know, if we are offered some feedback that, you know, robs us of the decision-making process on the way towards whatever that will be, then we are, you know, we miss the opportunities to evolve at the level of our soul. So, yeah, sometimes the information is withheld, but it usually emerges when the time is ripe. You know, as I say to people, there's only one timing, and that's divine timing, everything in its natural order.
The next thing I have on the list is the library, or the kind of, it's like a central place of knowledge, I suppose.
Yeah, look, there's lots of analogies around the Akashic records and, you know, places where we can look up the great book of ourselves. And like I mentioned before, the book of the lineage of our soul and the chapter that we're in now. Yes, there's, you know, there are some beings who are there and they are in the library and they work as librarians and they help us through this. What I'll offer as well is all of these very human sounding areas like temples or libraries. These are offered to us metaphorically in the spiritual realm so that we can integrate the information that we're given into human form. Of course, in a world of energy that's, you know, is created in any way we want it to be in that moment, whether these are, you know, these aren't bricks and mortar library, they're more, you know, metaphoric places that allow us to understand what's happening. But yes, the library is a popular one because people can go there and they can look up different types of information. I've had many describe a book, you know, go to the library, go to the shelf, get a book off the shelf that is their book, and they'll open that up and the book will be alive and it'll have different scenes and you'll be like watching videos page after page as they trace the information that they most need at that time.
Moving on from there, I suppose in the Life Between Life space, you get to a point where you're starting to consider a reincarnation and coming back onto the earth. You go to a life selection space.
Yeah, Michael christened this the Ring of Destiny. He talks about a lot of this in more in Destiny of Souls. He does mention it in Journey of Souls as well. And what he talks about is he talks about the options that we have before we incarnate. And sometimes there can be, you know, maybe three options of different lives that we might pick. And then in consultation with our guides or even council members, we may choose a particular lifetime that allows us whatever the learnings will be from that particular path versus the others that we're offered. So, yeah, there's a lot of loving thought goes into that as well. But it's interesting to do this in sessions because, of course, we know the body that we're in. But to know the other options available at that time is quite fascinating.
And so how do spirits or souls get to a point where they're going to reincarnate? Is it that they just feel it and decide to do it themselves, or does their soul guides start coming to them and say, well, we think it's time to go back?
Well, it's like a joint decision. It's like in the spiritual realm, we do the theory, but we come here to do the practical. And it's like this is, you know, we talk about that being maybe the out-of-body experience, but maybe this is the simulation, this physical realm that we're in here in order for us to learn and grow and evolve at the level of our souls. You know, I believe that there's an innate coding in all of life to evolve, and that's why, you know, a seed grows into a tree or, you know, a puppy becomes a dog or a child becomes an adult. It's like we're always evolving and growing, and I feel that souls are like that as well. It's something that's inherent to their being. So there's a desire for them to evolve, which, you know, taking human form, of course, is a wonderful way to do that. And to do that in the loving support of more advanced beings is really what life's all about, I feel.
What do you feel is the ultimate destination of a soul when it's been through everything it needs to go through?
Well, it's like we get to a stage in our own lives, Simon, as well, where we've, you know, we've come through to a certain age. We want to put something back in. A lot of people are drawn to more philanthropic type work as they get older. And I think that's a microcosm of the macrocosm of the universe, that as beings continue to evolve and grow, they look back and they help others do the same, which is, I feel, a guiding principle behind these councils and guides and beings that help us. Perhaps even other races in the universe that are here to help humanity. So, you know, I really feel that what it's all about is all of us moving through together. I believe that everything's connected and that we're all part of one big holographic universe, and that we simply seek, as consciousness does, to continue to grow and evolve in the company of others and as a collective.
So in your regressions and Life Between Lives sessions, have you come across people that have gone to lives that are not human, whether the animals or something else?
Yeah, many times. I mean, for us to understand that this is just one planet out of countless billions. And, you know, Eric von Däniken, many years ago, back in the 1960s, when he wrote Chariots of the Gods, etc., he got a group of mathematicians into a room and they worked out what's the probability of life on other planets. And they, you know, they came up with a probability of pretty much one. So there's other life out there. And of course, there's all manner of different you know, UFO groups and sightings and conspiracy theories that, you know, there's more out there. I mean, there's so many people that have witnessed phenomenon of other civilizations that are off world. But yeah, more practically in my clinic, I've had people describe many times that what it's like to be in another body. In fact, with clients, just to allow them to understand the beauty and the wonder of being human, I've often asked the question in LBL, have you ever experienced life in another form or dimension? And, you know, over the years, and, you know, I'm talking probably about maybe 800 or so LBLs that I've done, I've only ever had two clients say no. And normally in the other 798 or thereabouts, I've said ask to be shown, and they've been shown a different type of life form, which their soul is incarnated into at a certain period of time. So that's a long answer, but yes.
So when those clients describe these other life forms, do you see consistency there?
Most of them describe bodies that are lighter than these heavy, dense type bodies that we have in human form. They describe translucence, if you like. We're quite solid and opaque here in these human bodies. But when they talk about being a 9 foot tall light being with long fingers, and I've had a number of those over the years, I've had people describe to me what it's like to be stardust floating, you know, in the universe. I've had sessions where people have been different types of creatures, big slug type creatures in the mud. You know, we've sort of seen it all, really.
This is quite amazing. And has anything ever come that's really surprised you?
You know, it's at first, yes. I guess the first time I came up against off-world lives, I had to shift my own belief systems. And, you know, when I first had somebody go to a lifetime as one of these, say it was one of these 9 foot light beings. I use that example because it made such an impression on me at the time. And that person experienced what it was like to be in a light body, and they come to me with some pretty heavy depression and anxiety type themes in their life. And they access this light being, and they had this experience that, you know, what they were having here in human form wasn't the normal. They came out of it feeling much better. They felt lighter in their being. And I just thought that they'd gone to, you know, something in the realm of imagination, maybe even conscious interference or something, a desire to be in a different state of being. And then a month later, I had another one that described a very similar life. And of course, when I'd had two, I started to think, well, what's going on here? And then a month later, I had a third one. And I just said to the universe, stop sending them, I believe now. So it's like anything that I believe, or, you know, my perceptions of life have really come from what I've experienced myself.
Do you feel that people's prior knowledge or religious beliefs might affect what they experience?
I think they do, to the extent where the whole intention of Life Between Lives work as a huge offering to humanity by the spiritual realm is to integrate the information that we receive in those sessions back into our lives. And I've noticed that if somebody is a big believer in the Native American traditions, for example, their guide may present themselves as a medicine woman. If somebody is a Buddhist, their guide might appear as a Tibetan monk or something like that. It's like our superconscious, our soul self, adjusts the experience that that allows us to integrate the information further. If somebody sees libraries as a place of wisdom, then chances are a library is going to show up. So rather than observe that as what we call in our profession, as you know, conscious interference, somebody projecting into their session that which they believe here in human form, I think there's a loving molding, if you like, of the information that allows it to be presented in a way that allows for that integration.
I was talking to Dr. Janice Holden, who's been studying near-death experiences for decades, and she was saying something very similar about that, where people go into their near-death experience and they see Jesus. And she was saying she thinks that the entity is presenting themselves in such a way so that the experiencer will get the best out of the experience. So we were talking before recording about how there's a kind of well-known narrative to the Life Between Lives session that Michael Newton established, but now you're seeing diversions from it.
We are indeed, Simon, and Michael's first 7,000 clients were instrumental in allowing us to understand this work in its greater form. And it's like they were the foundationary piece. And it's a body of research, the likes of which the world's never seen in terms of afterlife work. So once these 7,000 came through, and bearing in mind that Michael had his first LBL experience accidentally in clinic, as these things often happen, he had that in 1968. And it was through the 70s where he honed it, and through the 80s and then into the 90s where he did the majority of his research. And then he retired from clinical practice in around 2002. First book came out in 96. So we're talking about the main weight of his sessions was in the late 70s and into the 80s. So the world is a very different place than what it was 30 or so years ago. So we're seeing clients who are coming in who are having the experiences that don't require the formal structure that has become so well known through Michael's books and some of our own sessions as well. And then I've had LBLs where I've had the very structured ones too. But we're seeing a wave of these, and we had a world conference in the US in 2017, and the biggest conversation for our people around the world was, you know, they're not like the books anymore. It's like the world has changed. Obviously, Michael was one facilitator. We now have over 200. It's something that has really evolved in a way where the same information is coming, but we're not seeing the council visits or the, you know, the prominent predominance of guide interaction. People are going into the spiritual room and finding their own answers. There might be conversation in a garden. There might be less formality in the council chamber. You know, they'll be walking down a path through a forest and chatting. It's like, you know, we see other ways in which the information is offered. We've had some of our people describe what we call a pool of oneness, where there's, you know, a beautiful lake of wisdom where people can obtain information. So it's the skills of the facilitator as well to be able to follow the client in whichever direction they want to be in order to get the answers that they seek.
Now, if we can move on and discuss your book, Quantum Consciousness, The Journey Through Other Realms. Could you give us an overview of that, please?
Well, one of the things that I started to become interested in was quantum physics, Simon. And I looked at quantum physics and I looked at some of the principles of alternate realities, about energy that changes shape and form, about how we, this creator effect, where we create whatever our destiny is to be. And it's like everything, we see everything at this macro level and it just behaves in a certain way according to, if you like, Newton's laws. That's Isaac, not Michael, of course. But, you know, as we go down into this subatomic world, we can do anything. I mean, these subatomic particles don't behave the way that we do in the macro form, and the macro form is made of the micro form. So how does all of that fit together? So my intention with quantum consciousness was to take some of these quantum principles to blend them into a session that replicates more of an out-of-body experience and to take people on journeys that access other realms of consciousness. And of course, in this, what I'd learned through my work with LBL had been that we can access some of these other realms of consciousness very easily under the right conditions. But for me, and you'll get this as a hypnotherapist as well, Simon, rather than go down into a trancey-like state, we would free the people's consciousness from their body, and rather than go down, we would go out. And through a whole series of different techniques, we'd take people out on these other journeys, and we'd, you know, from beyond the body, we would have interactions with other aspects of ourselves in the multidimensional reality. We'd work with, you know, ourselves at any ages, which would show up for interaction that required transcending some of the old traumas. We'd access alternate realities where we have that fork in the road, you know, a principle that is very well supported by quantum physics in terms of, you know, when you collapse the wave function, Does it then take on a certain reality, or does it exist in its different potentialities in the superposition, as they call it? And can we access those other selves? And you know, because we're so heavily quantum entangled with them, that became possible. Of course, in the absence of time and space, past lives are not past lives at all. And you would know from your own work that, you know, somebody's revivicating that day in the Colosseum when they're a gladiator, or they're, you know, running through a jungle trying to escape from the soldiers in that other lifetime or whatever it may be. It's not like that's all in the past. It's like they're revivicating that in the now. So then we move out through parallel lives into interdimensional ones, and then blend with the fabric of the cosmos itself as a true and beautiful out-of-body experience remembered while having in-body. That was a big answer, wasn't it?
Yeah. Okay, so I'd like to go over just a few of the ideas that are there in the book. The one you mentioned was the creator effect. What is that?
Well, there's a well-known phenomenon in quantum physics called the observer effect, and that, you know, if we do any sort of experimental work in a laboratory, because we are observing it, we affect it through our own perception. If you like, we entangle with the experiment. So they saw this with the double slit experiment, which I think a lot of people have heard of these days, and it's, you know, been mentioned in lots of different movies, and that, you know, if you observe particles and if you have a certain expectation of those particles, they'll actually behave in accordance with your intention. You know, whether they fire them through a single slit and they make an interference pattern on the wall behind. If they go through two slits, it's like the particles don't decide which slit in the, like a sheet of metal that they go through. It's like they go through both and they behave as both a particle and a wave. Now, if it can be in two places at once and make its own decision and have its possibilities, what does that mean for us in the at the macro level of being? So, you know, when we decide to make a decision, if you like, we might go in one direction, we might go in another direction, we will move into one of those realities in our awareness, but there's another one of us that goes in the other direction in terms of these quantum principles that creates an alternate reality. Now, if we can create an alternate reality, what can we create within this reality? And, you know, we've always heard about goal focus, and, you know, a lot of people have talked about, you know, you are your own destiny, create your own reality. And I really believe in that. I believe intention is everything. And if we have a strong enough intention to do something, strangely, it manifests in our lives, unless there's something in the way that we need to learn, of course. But, you know, we can actually control our own destiny, and once we believe that we can.
And does that include healing? Because I saw you mentioned in the book holographic healing. Is that linked to it?
Yeah, look, when I first started to do past life work, it became really important to understand that, you know, we have incredible potential to heal. And in past lives, sometimes a client would say to me, oh, I have, you know, this problem, and, you know, I can't get my practice up and running. If there's some sort of a healing person, we'll go into that in a past life, look for the reason behind it, and we'll find that, you know, they were ostracized by maybe some religious zealots in another life or whatever it might be. And then we get to the end of that life and they cross over after some sort of a difficult passing at the hand of those others. And then I might ask a question, well, how many times has this happened? And when they're out of body and they're in their greater awareness, they'll come back with a question, with an answer, yeah, 8 times. I'll say, well, let's get those 8 in here. And all of a sudden, 8 others will appear who've all been traumatized, and, you know, we'll work through whatever release and healing mechanisms we need to, and send those 8 back across time and space in a way that allows them not to hold this multiple trauma. So anything is possible when we're in these expanded states of being, and to heal 8 lifetimes at once can be something that's, you know, quite profound for the client. So, you know, it's the same as just within this life. If you've got somebody who's got a period of trauma and they've had multiple traumas in their life, you've got a choice as a hypnotherapist working subconsciously where these defense mechanisms are anchored. You can work with one of the traumas, or you can access, as you would know from your training, the original sensitizing event, and then clear the entire timeline of all the similar types of energies, because all of those events are quantumly entangled, if you like, across time and space. And holographically, if you change one small thing and then replicate that across a larger thing, then all of it is released.
Is there any indication that there is a space where there is no time? Because people talk about that in past life regression sessions or near-death experiences, that the place they go to doesn't have time.
Yeah, once we release ourselves from the confines of the physical body and the human intellect, time does change. And, you know, I did even a life between lives session with a fellow, and he was coming back out, and his brow was furrowed and he was scowling a bit and all that. And I said to him, he came back out and he was looking a bit perplexed, and I said to him, what is it? What are you feeling? He says, well, I'm just wondering why you brought me back after 20 minutes. And I said, have a look at your watch. He looked at his watch and his eyes just about popped out, and he realized he'd been under for 2.5 hours. So, you know, when we're in some of these other places, time does certainly distort it. I think it was Einstein that told us that time is an illusion anyway, and it's never more prevalent than when we're in these deeper states or expanded states of consciousness.
And because there's an idea that we are experiencing all our lives in the same moment, and that time isn't just linear.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I firmly believe that. I think, you know, we need to work with linear time while we're in this physical form, but I don't think it's the natural order of the universe.
So you mention in the book different types of consciousness: the stored consciousness, alternate, parallel, interdimensional. Could you go over those, please?
Yeah, stored consciousness, for my mind, is something that relates to this particular timeline that we're in. If we start to believe ourselves as this multidimensional being that is having a whole raft of different experiences at once, then that's one of the predominant aspects behind the model. And what we do in stored consciousness is we ask for any aspects of ourselves to come forward in the interests of healing or in the sharing of wisdom. Now, we take people out of their body and into a space where, as you've just described, Simon, where time doesn't matter. And, you know, things are very different from this physical realm. And sometimes we'll have a five-year-old turn up. Now, you know, as a traditional therapist, you would probably assume that, you know, the five-year-old must hold some trauma, etc. But a five-year-old may come forward in the vibration of freedom. So to have an interaction with your five-year-old self may remind you in adult form that, you know, freedom is something that you need more of. You might also get an eight-year-old that was, you know, upset by something, and they come forward and they just want to let you know that they're okay and that they wish to release, you know, the difficulty. And rather than go into a cathartic sort of, difficult energy where they may relocate some trauma or abreact, they come forward in a way that sets them free, because we've established a higher vibration when we've set up these quantum spaces for them to come forward in. So in stored consciousness, we may get any aspects of ourselves come forward that want to offer us advice, support, guidance, or even request healing from us. Now, interestingly, when I first started to do this work, I would have future states come forward. And, you know, when I first started to do this, I was about 50. And so my 60-year-old would turn up, and he'd offer some guidance and some advice and support, because he was further along in the timeline and he knew what was and wasn't working. So he was coming back to provide some advice in that. And I remember at one point I was looking for a new clinical practice here in my hometown of Melbourne, and because my old clinic had been sold. So I was looking to hire some more rooms, and I went and I had a conversation with a lady, and, you know, she was saying, do you want to take the rooms, blah, blah, blah. And I was about to say yes, and I got this intrusive sort of voice in my head that said no. And I thought, well, that was quite weird. And I said I'd get back to her. And when I went back, my 60-year-old came forward as I went into a session, just tracking that voice. He came forward and he said, don't take the room because it'll end badly for you. And there's a lady who'll come, and she's has some mental issues, and she's very, you know, powerful, and she'll set out to destroy you, and the work will, you know, fall away and won't get done. So, you know, when you spend some time in these metaphysical states, sometimes you get some messages that quite surprise you. So the stored consciousness is very much around this timeline. The alternate consciousness, as we move into that next realm, is about that fork in the road, other versions of ourselves that took a different path. We might have a conversation with a client about what is a big decision point where you wonder what would have happened if you went in the other direction. And they can be relationship or career, or, you know, their response to a certain set of circumstances. So we will often ask for one of those others to come forward, or one will just come forward in another way that has a very different vibration to the client in the chair, and they'll exchange information. And the way we facilitate that is to raise the vibration of both of them. So all this time we're getting further and further out beyond, you know, the physical state that the client's in, using their body as a doorway into these other realities. The next one, of course, is the parallel lives, which would be the equivalent of past lives experience, but outside of time and space. And certainly other versions of us come forward that have been in bodies on this planet. Then we do separate this planet to the rest of the universe in this method. So again, there'll be an exchange of wisdom or understanding or something that will be important for the client to know. And then we move out into the interdimensional, and that's when we track some of these expressions of our consciousness in other forms of life. And that in itself can be quite fascinating when we're offered, you know, what it's like to feel and to sense and to be, you know, in a body that lives in the ocean, in, you know, some sort of a flying animal, a bird type creature. And we'll be shown that for a reason. And it will be about freedom. It'll be about understanding what it's like to be able to soar, to take the higher view of things, the freedom of an ocean where you can go anywhere and do anything. And all of these carry frequencies and vibrations. By experiencing these in these different forms of life, they offer something back to us in this physical reality. Once we go past interdimensional, we move out into like an eternal consciousness where we no longer need any type of body at all. And we just rest in this eternal consciousness, blending with the fabric of the cosmos itself and just becoming part of all there is. And often we'll leave clients, says Simon, for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes just to experience this and to ensure that they retain the experience as part of their, you know, ongoing understanding of who they truly are. So as we go out through these different realms of consciousness, it's like we can take a theme through them and have multiple angles of a similar theme. We can go out there with an intention to, you know, just simply experience what comes. But these are higher vibrational experiences, not dissimilar to an LBL where, you know, they're a bit shorter and, you know, we tend to do these in about 2.5 hours. And ultimately, whereas LBL allows us to fully and completely experience what it's like to be a spiritual being, having a human experience, these quantum consciousness sessions help us to embrace the multidimensional resonance of who we really are and our place in the universe. So, yeah, I mean, I do a lot of both sessions, but all of them are designed to take the client into a new space.
And do you feel that the way consciousness reacts with the physical mind, the physical brain, is on a quantum level then? And where is consciousness?
Yeah, look, I think the neuroscientists are still looking for consciousness in the brain, even after all this time. But people like Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, you know, one of your countrymen, I mean, he's done a lot of work on morphic fields and morphic resonance. And if you look at Lynn McTaggart's work and her original work of The Field, and then her later books, like I think it's called The Intention Experiment, where consciousness is something that is shared across humanity. Carl Jung talked about the collective unconscious even back in his day. And it's like we are in like an entire morphic field of one species, and we're all one, if you like, in terms of human consciousness. And that's been proved many times through, you know, random number generator machines and, you know, in The Divine Matrix by Greg Braden. This is discussed in some detail. But basically what it shows us is that we are a conscious being, and now our awareness, if you like, is contained in the morphic field or the auric field or the electromagnetic field of who we are as people. I feel that our memories are sometimes trapped in our body as well. Trauma, for example, sometimes you can access trauma through the body. None of this has anything to do with the brain. And we start to wonder whether the brain, rather than an initiator of consciousness, is merely a receiver of it. And I think that that's closer to the truth.
So our mind's more like a radio set receiving a signal. They're not generating it.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy. They founded the HeartMath Institute in the US, and they do some fascinating work. And they travel around, do various presentations here and there. But what they're starting to see is that certain information starts in the heart and then moves to the brain. We've always thought that the heart listens to the brain and the brain initiates a lot of those impulses through the body that keep all of our organs working. But they're actually finding the opposite now, and that experimentation's continuing. But I think it's really a valuable field of work.
And there are stories of people having heart transplants and it affecting their tastes in music and food.
Yes, yes. I've heard some of those stories about the vegetarian who had, a desire for Big Macs. So I've heard some of those too. I think they're fascinating stories.
The book is available on Amazon. Is it? Can you get it in other places?
Yeah, look, there's various Amazons. There's Amazon Europe, Amazon Australia, and the US, of course. It's available in some bookshops. Distribution's happening through Llewellyn Publishing in the US. So I've even spotted it here in a bookshop in Melbourne. So they are doing some distribution here and there through local areas. And, of course, ebooks are popular these days too.
And if somebody wanted to do a Life Between Lives session with you, how would they contact you?
I'm available through my website, quantumconsciousness.com.au, which is the suffix that we have here in Australia. You can also Google Institute for Quantum Consciousness, where I discuss the work and talk about that. With the quantum sessions, I'm doing some of those online now this year, just trialing those and see how they go. Not so much the Life Between Lives sessions. For any of the people, particularly if you've got listeners in the UK, we've got a very strong network of Life Between Lives people across the UK and Europe. America, of course, is the home country. Here in Australia, we've had some in Asia as well. So we're actually in about 40 countries. So to do Life Between Lives work in particular, you can find a list of those people on newtoninstitute.org.
Well, it's been great having you on the podcast. It's a great conversation. Thank you for giving us your time.
My pleasure, Simon. It's been great to talk to you.
And that was an interview with Peter Smith about his book, Quantum Consciousness, Expanding Your Personal Universe. And a great way to support the podcast is to join Patreon, where you get access to the extended episodes. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And you can sign up for a 7-day free trial. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife. And I have a new website. It is simonbound.com. That's bound, not brown. It replaces the Past Lives Hypnosis website. And you can go to that website for past life regression, as well as info on my books and podcasts. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.